Hey, now, welcome to the City Off Campus podcast with your two favorite hosts, Sammy Sommerfeld and Jack McFarland. Today's guest is sports anchor at ESPN, Kevin Negandhi. How's everything with you?
Good to talk to you guys. Glad to be a part of this.
Yeah, so my first question for you is kind of just talking about your journey from studying communications at Temple to now being an anchor on SportsCenter and sports anchoring all these shows. We're journalism students, we're seniors at the journalism school at University of Iowa. So I'm just kind of curious about how did you get from where you were at studying communications to ending up at ESPN?
So I originally went to Syracuse and thought that I needed to follow track the way, you know, the great Dick Stockton and Mike Tirico and Bob Costas went through. And, you know, I wanted to become the next Bob Costas. I realized in one semester that the school wasn't going to make me. It was what I was going to do at the school. I was not a fan of the weather there. I looked around. I wasn't going to get a lot of early opportunity because to me, the most important thing in college, you know, well, if you're in broadcasting, communications, journalism is experience. That's what's going to get you the next job or the next relationship you're going to build. And I wasn't going to get that early on at Syracuse. So I transferred. I'm a local area Philly kid. I grew up in the suburbs and I transferred to Temple. It was the best decision of my career because there was opportunity there. By the time I was 19, I was in the Phillies broadcast booth with Harry Callis and Whitey Ashburn, two Hall of Famers, two legends. I was, you know, at 21 interviewing Allen Iverson his rookie season. I was at the crossover game with Jordan. I was in that market for doing internships, working, calling play-by-play at Temple for 3 years. I was doing stuff with the TV station. I had, again, five internships, which were building relationships. I was writing for the college newspaper as a senior editor. So for me, it was just opportunities, right? And that led to one thing, which led to another thing. And then that got me my first job in Market 4 at a high school sports show on Fox, right before the Eagles pregame. That got me a very good tape. Now, you know, people your age now call it like a reel on YouTube. For us, it was a VHS tape, and it got me the ability to be in studio, do a variety of things, look presentable when it came to applying to jobs. And my first job was actually not far from you guys. It was in Kirksville, Missouri, Market 199, and I lived in Ottumwa, Iowa. For 3 months, that's where the satellite station was, where I was a reporter. And then on the weekends, I'd drive to Kirksville and I was anchoring sports there at the ABC affiliate, KTVO. For me, going there was, you know, I took a massive pay cut because I was doing a pretty good job in Philadelphia as a 22-year-old. And people were like, why are you leaving? You know, you're doing this, you're doing that. And I was like, I need to be on TV every day. I need to make mistakes every day. So I went to KTVO in Kirksville, Missouri. I was making $15,000 and I was on the air every day just learning how to shoot, learning how to do interviews, learning how to put together packages, learning how to put together a sports cast. It was great. It was great. And I didn't have to worry about a family or a mortgage or a car payment. So it worked out really well where you could survive. I got a little bump in pay when I became the sports director to 16,000. It was like the greatest thing in the world. So it worked out great. And then my next job was in Sarasota, Florida. And, you know, eventually you build relationships, you build contacts. And somebody ran into me and was like, why are you not like in a bigger place? And I was like, I'm pretty happy here. And they were like, well, you need to go see somebody in New York. There's an agent that's interested in you. I had an agent before. And I was like, I'm good. I don't need an agent. And like 6 months later, I reached out to that person again. I said, tell me more about this agent that you know. She was great. She told me more about him. I reached out to the agent at the time. I just said, hey, what do we got to lose? Handshake agreement. And he's like, yeah, handshake agreement. We're on the phone. Give me 6 months. I think you can have an opportunity somewhere at network or regional. And within 3 months, he got me a tryout at ESPN, and I beat out 7 people. I got the tryout, I got the audition, nailed it, and I've been at ESPN for 15 years. So the journey, I try to tell many people that get into the business, the journey is not something that you could duplicate. Like my journey next to my co-anchor on the 6 p.m. Sports Center, Elle Duncan, is completely different. I mean, she was in radio in Atlanta for 9 years doing that stuff on the morning show. Then eventually she got to NESN and then got to ESPN. Like, everybody has a different path. So your path to get to where you want to be is going to be completely different from mine. If I stop every single ESPN anchor, just looking at my offices, you know, and the, you know, outside, John Buchgras, John Anderson, Carl Ravitch, each one of them have different journeys that don't make sense. But in the end, you find out that you're in the location you want to be, the destination. And I don't want anybody to ever think you've got to follow my path. I think the experience and the recipe that we have that led us to success is the way to go, but not the, hey, I need to do this to get to this, to get to this. That equals that. It doesn't work like that in the business.
Yeah, that's interesting. So getting to ESPN then and hosting SportsCenter, you know, I know you worked on like Cold Pizza early on, Baseball Tonight, outside. You've worked on all these different shows. With SportsCenter, what's the prep like for that compared to other shows? Like, how do you prep each day, especially being the 6 p.m. hour where, you know, a lot of sports news usually happens by the time it gets to you and people are usually off work and they're, you know, off school and they're trying to get recap. So can you kind of talk about the prep time and what goes into building the 6 p.m. hour SportsCenter?
It's a great question. SportsCenter is a completely different hat from any of the other shows. You know, like, for example, I'm on ABC on Saturdays doing college football. So I'm not thinking about the U.S. Open in tennis or the Ryder Cup coming up in golf. On SportsCenter, I've got to wear multiple hats, be completely in tune with everything because – you know, and the strengths would be the NFL, the passions, you know, that I have, baseball, college football, the NBA, college basketball. You know, I can already tell you those are going to be my strengths, but I've got to know enough about, hey, what's going on right now in tennis? What's going on right now in golf? I've got to keep up to date with all of these other sports and NASCAR and the Olympics. And so you're always challenged in that light in the NHL. You're always challenged in that light where, you're keeping up to date with stuff. That's it. Like, just keeping up to date. Now, the prep work is we have a noon meeting. The producer's on the call with everybody on the show, coordinating producer, director, the, you know, talent that's on the air, the segment producers. And we're just talking about, hey, what do we want to talk about today? What are the hot button topics? And it's just a brainstorming for 30 minutes. And then, you come in. By like 2 o'clock, the producer has the entire rundown built. You start writing at 3, but you're also fully aware by 5 o'clock, you're doing early tapings. Hey, Schefter, can you do Schefter at 5:30? Can you do Dan Orlovsky at 5:15? Keyshawn's available at 5 o'clock. We got Greg McElroy at 5:05. So you're working that schedule every single day while still keeping up to date. And then you'll have breaking news potentially drop at 5:50. And that happens every single day. And you got to be on your toes. You've got to be aware of what's going on right now in the pennant races. I've got to fully understand the wild card dynamic in the AL, the NL, the MVP race, what recently happened over the weekend. At the same time, let's take a look at week 2 storylines in the NFL and what happened in week 3 in college football. Let's get ready for the Ryder Cup. We just got off the U.S. Open. Like, all of that stuff is happening. And you've got to be mentally prepared. You have to have context. You've got researchers you can lean on. But here's the thing. You can fool somebody to a certain point, but eventually you'll get exposed when it comes to breaking news or things you've got to handle right then and right now. So I always tell people, don't just think that you're walking in. Like, today's my day off. I'm still going to be in tune with what other shows are doing, what's leading. What's the storylines? I can't just turn it off. Now, it's healthy to turn it off sometimes, but at the same time, it's also healthy to, hey, let me just check in on what's going on right now. Nothing wrong with that.
How have you seen SportsCenter since you were younger and you you know, engage with that content. How have you seen it change from then to now when you are now behind the scenes kind of working on all of it?
Well, access, right? I'm pulling up my phone and people can have highlights immediately on their phone at any time. I think the difference with SportsCenter nowadays is that you're no longer presenting, hey, it's the first time you're seeing it, but you're saying, hey, here's the context of why this happened. Here's the explanation behind the scenes. Here's the buildup to this event happening. You don't get that on the phone. On the phone, you'll get like a highlight and you'll get, oh, wow, look at that play. For me, it's, hey, here's the buildup to that play. Here's why that was called. And then here's the fallout afterwards. And I think that's where SportsCenter can provide that nuance. We have the ability to have very layered conversations to a certain extent, also give you the reaction. But, you know, the SportsCenter I grew up with, you know, and that was in the late 80s, mid 90s, and the Dan and Keith shows and the Eisen and Stuart Scott's and Watt and Boomer, Chris Berman and Bob Lee and Robin Roberts. Those shows, you're like, I can't wait to watch this because it's the first time I'm seeing, you know, the Padres Cardinals game and oh no, there's a fight. You know, like by that time, it's on SportsCenter. Everybody's broken down and consumed all the information on what happened in the dugout. So, you know, I think SportsCenter has just changed the philosophy of we react, we also explain, we also get build up and get you ready for the next type of topical conversation.
And when you got your first initial start at ESPN, did you have a vision of what you wanted SportsCenter to eventually like kind of turn into, or did you just kind of wanted to keep it constant and what it had been for the network at that point?
Well, listen, I've been very lucky to work a variety of different sports centers. So the sports center in name is a little bit different in time slot, right? So, you know, when I first got to ESPN, I was grateful that I was not on sports center. I think in the mid 2000s, ESPN News was an outstanding minor league system for many anchors to kind of build and understand, hey, when you're on SportsCenter, it's a big deal. So we were on 2 to 3 hours on ESPN News constantly reacting. And so I was on that for a year. And then it allowed me to do a variety of different other shows and handle breaking news. And then when I got the call on a sick day to jump in to do SportsCenter, I was more than prepared. And so, you know, I've been lucky to do the 11 p.m. SportsCenter, the closed shows on SportsCenter, LA on SportsCenter, and then 5 years of the morning show with Hannah Storm, SportsCenter AM. We're the first ones to start SportsCenter AM at 7 a.m. With Jay Harris and, you know, a variety of other anchors where it was really, really, really cool to do a show. And we were the first ones to start. I did that for a couple of years. And then to go to the 6 p.m. So you're wearing multiple hats and different mindsets on what exactly that show is for that audience. So the 11 p.m. is these are the highlights. These are the big stories. The morning show is this is what happened. Here's the reaction. Let's talk about it. The 6 p.m. is, hey, we've consumed all day. Here's an update on injuries. Here's a pregame show. And at the same time, here are the top stories. So it is a different mindset for each and every type of sports center and time slot. So it can work. My vision on SportsCenter was just have fun, make sure I'm myself, make sure I'm transparent, make sure that my passion and energy doesn't change, and make sure I'm myself. I'm not trying to be like somebody else. And I'm proud that comes out, that what you see is what you get. You're not going to get somebody who's trying to give you a catchphrase or who's trying to, you know, follow the SportsCenter mold. No, I'd rather just be, here's Kevin Negatti, a fan that loves it as much as you do. And let's just do this together and have fun.
I read somewhere that you met President Obama and he told you that he watched you every morning on TV. What was it like having the President of the United States say he watched you on TV every morning? Because I'm sure you expect, you know, notable figures to watch SportsCenter who are sports fans, but to have the president watch you, what was that kind of like? And what was that interaction like?
That's crazy. It's one of those moments you're like, what is going on? I mean, some context, I was invited to the White House along with 8 other people at ESPN because we are part of the Special Olympics And the broadcast rights as owners, we do the World Games, the Summer Games, the USA Games, which is amazing because we get to put these athletes on a pedestal and explain their stories. And I think, you know, what's incredible about the whole experience is that all they want, the Special Olympic athletes, is a chance to be included in events and to be able to compete, build confidence in who they are. And then you get the chance to showcase that on network TV, and they're suddenly a household name that week, which is great. So the president, President Obama, was highlighting those families and those athletes. And so about 200 people were at this dinner, celebrities, but many of them that were part of it were the athletes and the families that were being honored. So, you know, we have this dinner. But right before the dinner, you have the chance to meet the president, and the Secret Service is making sure, hey, no cameras. We have our professional camera. Put your phones away. You're going to go down. It takes 2 seconds. Introduce yourself to the president, the first lady, then move on. So you're waiting and you're trying to figure out, all right, how am I going to do this? Because there's no like formality. There's no like book that says, hey, this is how you greet the president. So eventually my turn comes. I stick out my hand. I say, Mr. President, it's a pleasure meeting you. My name is, and he stops and he goes, whoa, Kevin, we watch you every morning. And then he looks over to the first lady, Michelle, don't we watch Kevin every morning? And at this point, like I'm, my jaw is on the floor. And the first lady goes, oh gosh, yeah, we have always have you on, Kevin. And he could have been just saying that. Like, I'm fully aware of it. You know, and I walk out of there and it's just an incredible moment. And I'm with a couple of ESPN executives and they're like, yeah, man, I wish I was the guy that the president wakes up to. And we had a lot of fun with it. But it just gives you, it gives you some perspective that too often you put your head down, you work every day, you're not even aware of who's watching and how that changes things. And later on, I actually had an in-depth conversation with the president that night, and I joked around with him and I was like, hey, well, you know, when this is over, you know, we could always have a spot for you on SportsCenter and, you know, come on down anytime. And he's like, Kevin, are you kidding me? When this is over and I'm looking for a job, I'm coming to take your job. And he was just mad cool about it. It was a great like moment and he handled everything really well. I actually talked to somebody that was part of his crew. When I say crew, like, you know, the guys behind the scenes that are always with the president. And they said specifically, they're like, yeah, so he has TVs on and he's prepping for the day, and that the sports like angle gives him a break from the stress of dealing with being the president of the United States. And it always helped him just to get his mind off things, look up, you know, catch a few highlights, come back down and get back to business. And I always thought that that's the whole reason why we got into this. That's the whole reason we want to provide a distraction. We want to be entertaining. We want to have fun. And if I could provide that to the most powerful person in the world for a few minutes daily during my job, during SportsCenter AM, how lucky is that?
Yeah, that's great. I just have two final questions for you. One of them, it kind of ties into that, which is like, what's like, you know, each anchor, you know, people kind of relate to them in a different way. Like, you know, growing up, you have the anchors that you watched and, you know, you kind of, you know, they're, you know, you connect with them in certain ways. And you talk about kind of being that guy who makes it clear, you know, you're just a fan doing the job and you want that authenticity with the viewers. How do you kind of work to build that up and build kind of that relationship on screen with the audience? And then this just is kind of like a fun question too, but it's also, I know you've hosted the National Spelling Bee and I was kind of curious to ask about that experience because I feel like that's such a different experience than a lot of the other things you get to have your hands in.
Yeah, so the first question, Sam, is for me, the most important thing is making sure I have credibility. And being of Indian descent, being the first Indian American at the network on the air, I heard a lot of early on in my career questions about, what do you know? You don't know what you're talking about with sports. So for me, I had to work harder than many of my peers because I had to make sure that I had credibility and I could win the audience over, that I am as relatable to sports and I love sports as much as you do, even though you've never seen an Indian guy, an Indian American give you highlights. And I'm very lucky that now it's not questioned, but in the beginning it was questioned, especially at ESPN, especially at the, you know, when I early years got on Twitter, where I had to read stuff like, you know, I don't need a terrorist telling me highlights and stuff. And you've got to break those doors down and say, listen, I love it as much as you do. And I'm going to make sure that there are no holes in this argument that I deserve to be here. So I had to work super hard and making sure that people never doubted me, that when I was delivering a highlight, I was going to deliver it with passion, but information. So you had no room to criticize. And I put a lot of pressure on myself to make sure that I built that trust with the audience. I wasn't given like the benefit of the doubt, like many of my peers are immediately, you know? So it takes time and it takes a lot of head down, outwork everybody, always be available, always be on a show, always be relatable. And I'm pretty proud of the fact that, you know, that's no longer in question. And then, you know, after I was hired, I put a maybe undue amount of pressure to say, I've got to make this right and succeed, because who knows if they're going to hire another Indian American or anybody that looks like me. Because if I fail, I could fail for a lot of people that have the dream to do this that look like me. I was pretty proud that after, you know, I was hired, within a couple years, Anish Shroff was hired, Adnan Berg, Zubin Mehenti, Nabil Kareem, like people that look like me, you know, grew in the industry at ESPN because they were good. Adam Amin, not because of skin color or, hey, we need somebody. It was because, no, we need somebody that's good. And all those guys have built amazing careers because they're just great at their job and they outwork everybody. And that's the only thing we know. As it relates to the spelling bee, listen, I'll be the first one to tell you that I would watch the spelling bee from a different point of view, because it's dominated by Indian Americans. And so we would call it the Indian Super Bowl, and because it's that one night on ESPN where we can dominate, where wow. It's just like, oh my gosh, like we have a dynasty and we're rolling through things. But for me, I related to many of the kids because of, you don't want to disappoint your parents. And I related to it because my father was always like, education is the key. My mother, education is the key. It opens the door to literally everything. You will outwork everybody studying. And I see the kids go through that. And what I tell people now about the spelling bee specifically is that it is an event that we cover like a sporting event, because if you look at child prodigies in sports, like a Tiger Woods, like a Serena Williams, many of these kids are playing these sports day in and day out, practicing every day. They're around professionals and teachers every day. That's what these spellers are doing the same way. They are practicing every day. They're putting in the extra time, and they're with professionals and coaches to get them better to this moment. So it's very relatable with the work you put in, and then you see the competition. You're not competing against another speller, you're competing against the dictionary. And many of these kids, like a Tiger Woods, you're not competing against another golfer, you're competing against the course. And I wanted to make sure the audience was aware of that, that these kids are all relatable to the kids that you see every day that are phenoms in sports that usually are standard stuff. Oh, he's the next baseball genius like Bryce Harper. He's the next basketball savant like LeBron James. Many of these young kids are the next bright scholar who's going to maybe discover how he can get to Mars and stay there. And I love to actually be able to be in that position where we can talk about that, talk about their stories, and add a fuel of context into this little fire melting pot of a storyline. And we work with a great group that understands that and shares those stories. So to me, I'm lucky to be a part of it and add some context to it.
So this is going to be the final question. We really appreciate you for taking the time. We know you're a big Philadelphia sports fan. How do you feel personally about where the Eagles are going with Nick Sirianni and Jalen Hurts? I mean, I feel like that's a big discussion and there isn't a whole lot of belief in it that it will work, but what do you feel?
I like it. I went into this season with no expectations because no one had any idea how Nick Sirianni was going to coach because we have no background resume, right? And when I say that, I'm saying, how are you going to handle tight games, close moments, 2-minute warning? What are you going to do in those moments? The only thing I ask from Nick Sirianni and this offense and the Eagles is give Jalen Hurts an entire season before we make a decision. He deserves that. Give Jalen Hurts the ability to grow, make adjustments in September to see what happens in December before we make a decision on, hey, is he a quarterback for the future? And right now I like it. I thought week one was great. I came in with no expectations. Week two, they could learn a heck of a lot, especially when you're first and goal after that 91-yard hookup to Quez Watkins and you can't score points. That's where you learn from this situation. That's where Nick learns from his play calling. So I feel pretty good, but I'm going into the season with no expectations. I don't think this is a playoff team. If they win 8-9 games, it's because their offensive line stayed healthy. But we already saw an injury to Barrett Brooks. Their defensive front already lost the heart and soul in Brandon Graham. We'll see if they have the depth. That was my biggest question because their two strengths are the offense and defensive lines. Now, I know that was my question. With you guys and your background, I need to know, how do we feel about Iowa football the rest of the season? Are they the best team in the Big Ten after what we've seen the first couple of weeks?
I would say
– I think – go yeah. ahead, Tim.
I would say, yeah. I mean, our defense is probably the most unified defense we've had. Like, I think one of my biggest question marks was we didn't have that – big star name on our defense going into this year that like normally kind of carries us a little bit, like a Josie Jewell, AJ Epinesa, something like that. And so one of our biggest questions that we talked about on the podcast was, would the defensive line, it's so young, would it hold up? And they're just putting pressure. They had 7 sacks in the last game against Kent State. They just played phenomenal. I think our biggest question mark now is just, can our offense stay consistent and can our quarterback manage the game? Because I was at the game Saturday and he was struggling to hit the short throws, the consistent short throws that make Iowa football Iowa football. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of our biggest question mark right now. But I think we'll be able to kind of clean that up as he continues to just play more games. So right now, I think we are. I just think our defense is just way better than every other defense in the Big Ten.
I agree with that. And to go on top of it, it does come down to the Iowa offense. And after watching Penn State and Auburn play this weekend in prime time, I think a lot of Iowa fans know now that it's going to be really tough for the Hawkeyes to score points against Penn State if the offense is going to continue to play like they have. We're 3 games in. This was the easiest matchup for the offense so far this year, and they didn't do great off the start, but they finished strong. They have another good opportunity this week to get better before they have to play Penn State in a couple weeks, which that is the biggest game for Iowa right now. If they want to stay in this national conversation, it starts with that Penn State game. So I think the offense has their work cut out for them, but without a doubt, this defense is top 5 and Iowa is definitely in the conversation, I'd say, for the Big Ten championship game.
Well said. I completely agree with you. Penn State will be a great measuring stick. Petras has got to make 4 or 5 plays in a game like that, not just 2. He's got to make 4 or 5 of them because they're going to load up the box to stop Tyler Goodson. And if you can stop Goodson, it comes down to Petras trying to make a couple of short throws. The defense will keep them in the game. It's the question of, can that quarterback make sure he could separate himself and keep that Penn State defense on its heels and guessing? Because if that defense is not guessing, they're going to tee off and they're going to, again, stop the run. So it's good times. I mean, when you came into the season, a lot of people were obviously circling Ohio State. It feels like a different story. And I kind of like that the Big Ten is a little wide open this year. And we'll learn a little bit about Michigan this weekend with Rutgers. So I like it. And I wish you guys the best of luck.
Yeah, I think the Big Ten's in good hands this year. But, Kevin, we can't thank you enough for taking the time. And like always, guys, not the same time, same place. We will see you guys later.